Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I am hail.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios. Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Thank you, thank you. Welcome back, everybody.
It's hour two, Toker Talk Radio, where you are the voice of the marijuana nation. So glad to have you here. Oh, raucous applause.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bring that down just a little bit. You guys are crazy. Well, it's back to being gray and cloudy here in Oregon. I can't see Mount Hood out that window, and I can't see Mount St. Helens out the other window, so time for me to hit the road. The sunshine is gone. I've got to go chase the sun. We're headed out to Washington, D.C. on Thursday, and really looking forward to it, although I understand it's been kind of cold on the eastern seaboard. We'll see what the weather turns out to be, but I'll be covering the Students for Sensible Drug Policy conference out there in Washington. It's happening in Arlington. And I also get the opportunity to hang out with my friend Keith Strop, the founder of Normal. And it's my hope that we get a chance to have a good, intimate conversation about what's happening in marijuana law reform. And we'll bring that to you here as an exclusive on the Russ Belville Show. We got a lot of changes coming up for the Russ Belville Show, too. Got to do a rebuild on my website. I've got some new posts up there at RadicalRust.com, but we need a rebuild. Put some of the cannabis radio branding on that, maybe reconfigure it a little bit, modernize it a bit for tablets and everything, make it a little more podcast friendly. And we'll be bringing back the Russ Belville Show VIPs, very important potheads. No, very important people. And you'll be able to get other exclusive content and all sorts of discounts through the Russ Belville Show and our sponsors and suppliers if you become a VIP. So we'll get that set up. I imagine around May, we'll probably be rolling that out. And if you were a previous 420 Radio VIP, you will be grandfathered in. We'll just port you right over, and you'll be a Russ Belville Show VIP. Some of the cool things include your own custom Russ Belville Show pin. And like I said, we'll have all sorts of content and discounts available for you. So I had a listener from Texas who's in the chat room, said he was going to be calling in. So we've got the phone lines open. We'll wait for that call. It says he disagrees with me, with something he's heard me say year after year, which is, yeah, that's good. I'm glad people disagree with me. Kelly in the chat room says he never got swag from the 420 Radio VIP. Oh, Kelly, email me. I'll get that stuff to you. RadicalRust@gmail.com. May have fallen through the cracks. I've had to move a couple of times, so things have gotten a little chaotic. Appreciate your patience, though, and appreciate your support. You know, I've never been more sure about anything in my life than what I'm doing right now, traveling across the country, meeting reformers, pushing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition, learning about the topic, researching the science, the history, the culture, everything having to do with cannabis. This is my life's mission, and I couldn't be more honored that you guys help support me do that. So thank you so much. And so long as you keep doing that, I'll keep doing this, and I'll keep bringing you free content weekdays on CannabisRadio.com so you can
listen on your commute or while you're trimming or whatever it is you're doing when you're listening to this podcast. All right, we're going to take a break. And in 2 minutes, we'll be back, maybe with a caller. If not, we'll discuss some more about that Australian medical marijuana and how medical marijuana headlines aren't as fun as they used to be. You're listening to Toker Talk Radio, hour two of the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, live from Portland, Oregon.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Voober way.
Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 9 minutes after the hour, and I hope we've got our caller on the line. He's been trying to dial in. I saw the voice message came through, so I just made the dial back. I hope you can forgive me for dialing you back, but do we have our Texas toker on the line?
You do. How's it going, Mr. Belville?
I'm doing fantastic, but Mr. Belville's somewhere in Nampa, Idaho right now. That's my dad. I'm Radical Russ, man. What's happening?
Hey, I just wanted to call in. First of all, just wanted to say thanks for everything you're doing. I've been listening since Normal Show Live days and listening and learning.
Thank you.
I wanted to call in because there's something I sadly have to disagree with that I've heard you say over and over again.
Don't be sad, because I could be wrong.
Well, actually, I believed it too until about this time last year. And that's that the herb is a more social drug than other drugs.
Okay.
I think you mentioned the anecdote that, you know, you never see a beer circle.
Yeah.
And right, yeah, and up until Cannabis Cup in Denver last year, I totally agreed. But one thing that I noticed and was kind of saddened by was the fact that when everybody has their own stash, you're less likely to want to share spit with your neighbor that you don't know.
Yeah. No, I think you're onto something there. There's a great Chief Greenbud song called When Pot Was Illegal. And it goes, when pot was illegal, it used to be fun. You could roll into town and not know anyone, right? And it was all about how being outlaws, we had this shared community where, you know, you had to share weed. But now, and I agree with you on this point, because I've been to some of these cups, you know, especially with younger people, and it's all vape pens now. And everybody's just got their own vape pen, and they're not passing that around or sharing. So you may be onto something there.
So, yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's probably more of a function of prohibition than the fact that it's necessarily more social.
Yeah, so I guess now we'd have to like evaluate, you know, now that we can tease the prohibition out of it, right? Now, like you said, everybody can have their own stash. Now we have to figure out, all right, so does the psychological effect of cannabis versus alcohol make a difference into whether or not people are social? You can argue with alcohol that it lowers your inhibitions. So, you know, you're more likely to have fun and party. And maybe with marijuana, you can argue it makes you more introspective. And so, you know, the pharmacology of it may actually make us less social. So it'll be something we'll have to look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right on. Well, I appreciate you calling in, man. And you're in North Dallas, is that right?
That's correct.
Far out, man. I'll be out there for the Global Cannabis March out there in Fort Worth on May 7th.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you.
I love it. Every time I go to Texas, I have a great time.
Right on.
All right, thanks for calling
in. Thanks for having me on, Russ.
You bet. Appreciate that. Although, actually, I called him, so but he did call in first. We just playing telephone tag, and that's cool. Please disagree with me. Please. Please. That's how I learn. That's how I hone my arguments, right? Like, imagine, like, you were a ninja, and you never trained. You never fought. You never had any sparring, right? Your skills would decline. No matter how much you train on your own, your skills would decline. You need battle. You need to hone your skills with an opponent. And so if you disagree with me, please call in. I appreciate that. You may find we don't really disagree that much. Anyway, the phone line's 971-533-7111. Toker Talk Radio, Hour 2. You are the voice of the marijuana nation. Let me get back to this story we covered briefly in the headlines. And it was about Victoria, the state in Australia. And this is where Melbourne, Australia is located. Victoria has become the first state to legalize medical cannabis in Australia. And this has generated some international headlines. Wow, you know, legalized medical cannabis. Yay, yay. But these headlines now are slowly becoming less and less celebratory for me. Because once you start reading the story, it's not about medical marijuana like we would think of it in the West Coast, where a patient who's suffering can plant some seeds in a pot and grow a plant they could harvest and then use to treat themselves at relatively low cost. No, this is one of these medical marijuanas where the state's going to license a few commercial growers who have to pass enormous financial and regulatory hurdles to get into the game. And they'll manufacture some non-smoked cannabis oils and tinctures and balms and lotions and pills and inhalers or anything else that you can't smoke. Anything that takes it away from being a bud, that's what you'll be able to get your hands on in Victoria, Australia. And this is, you know, this is going along with the trend that we've seen in Minnesota and New York and what they're proposing in Pennsylvania and some other states. This whole idea of this non-smoked medical marijuana, it's really the only direction medical marijuana could have gone, rhetorically and strategically. Our opponents know they've lost the argument on whether or not marijuana is medicine. It's, you know, there's no denying it, especially after the Sanjay Gupta specials, and you see these seizing little kids that become healthy again. There's no denying it anymore. But the way they can deny it is through the successful demonization of tobacco smoking. Smoking has become a nasty thing. Smoking is something lower class, degenerate, ew, smoking is disgusting kind of thing.
Again, not my opinion, just, you know, talking about what our societal framing is right now.
So our opponents, to some degree of success, are pulling in that disgust and that social disapproval of smoke and attaching it to marijuana. And that's happening in the non-smoked medical marijuana states, as if smoking the marijuana would somehow be non-medical for these people. But they can attack it because of this fear of smoke in the tobacco frame. And this is extended even into the recreational marijuana frame here in the state of Oregon, where they amended our Clean Air Act to include secondhand smoke from cannabis. And the whole premise of the act was the secondhand smoke from tobacco is shown to be harmful, and that's harmful for workers and people in public buildings, and so we need to ban it. So they just tacked on something else that hasn't been scientifically shown to have those same harms. They're just using the harms of tobacco smoke in a guilt by association to attack cannabis smoke. And they're winning. It's working in the medical marijuana realm. Because it forces us, if we're trying to defend a whole plant medical marijuana, it forces us to defend people smoking a medicine, and no other medicine is smoked. And we get that attack from the Kevin Sabet handbook of, well, we don't smoke opium. We've got morphine. We don't smoke opium. Now, we know that it's fallacious in that just because it's being smoked, just because the route of administration might be disapproved on by society doesn't mean it doesn't actually work medically. We know the facts. Facts don't always help when you're dealing with these debates. These are debates based on emotion and prejudice and fear. So sometimes the facts don't help. And in this case, we're losing this battle. Medical marijuana is increasingly becoming more medical and less marijuana, as I predicted it would. The end path of medical marijuana is GW Pharmaceuticals' bottom line. Simple. Because medical is a bigger frame than marijuana. We tried to use medical to save marijuana. Marijuana was in this terrible, awful frame throughout the 60s and 70s and somewhat the 80s of being the stoners and the losers and the gateway drug and all the terrible things they said about it. And so in the 90s, some of the reformers said, hey, to rescue this frame, we'll reframe it with medical marijuana. Now we've got a new frame. Marijuana is something good that helps sick people with AIDS and cancer. Marijuana is a good thing. It's medical. Problem is, once we landed into that medical frame, we now became subject to everything else in the medical frame. Doctors, prescriptions, dosages, potencies, side effect lists, and so forth. So we got stuck into this paradigm that says to get your healing, you have to go to the learned physician in the white coat who's paid through the paid with the insurance money. We bought into the very paradigm that medical marijuana, that the medical use of cannabis, could break us away from. The best part about medical cannabis is you can grow it yourself and use it yourself without any other outside producer or processor or retailer. You don't need the pharmaceutical factory, the pharmaceutical company, the pharmacy, the pharmacist, the health insurance, the doctor's prescription. You can plant a seed in the ground and heal yourself with a flower. That's the best part of medical marijuana. But the tactic of medical marijuana put us in the realm of pills and doctors and pharmacists. So it reiterates what I've always been saying, and that is, if you want access to whole plant cannabis, if you want access to the cannabis plant, whether it's because it's your sacrament for your religion or because it's your medicine for your condition, you need to get behind people who want it because they just want to get high. Because so long as you maintain artificial reasons as to why someone has the right to use cannabis, you face the possibility of being left out.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Oh no, When Bill O'Reilly calls you an MF-er, you know something's up. And I know what's up. It's 420 here in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, where I can light this joint and I can smoke it legally. That's what I'm going to do. If you can do so, I would encourage you to do so as well. If you're an adult. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stick around.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary, cannabisradio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up!
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's TheSilverTour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at HempInc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from TheSilverTour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at HempInc.com.
You're listening to Radical Russ on The Russ Belville Show.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the fingerboard extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 and a half after the hour. And continuing our look at the international marijuana news, we just talked about Australia. Now, let me go back to France. We had that story from Paris, France, about this parliamentary minister who suggested that, hey, prohibition's not working. I mean, look around you. We've got prohibition since 1970 in France, and our kids use marijuana more than any other kids in Europe. French kids, 15% of French 15-year-olds, according to the World Health Organization, have consumed marijuana. And so this this minister committed a gaffe, which in politics is described as inadvertently telling the truth. And in this case, the gaffe was telling the truth that prohibition in France isn't working. You've got the highest teen rate of marijuana use, yet you've had prohibition since 1970. Your war on drugs is not working. And he suggested that maybe we ought to start looking at doing some decriminalization in stages for adults. Oh, no, no, no. There is a terrible, terrible outcry from both the left and the right in France. One of his fellow party members, socialist party members, jumped all over him on this measure, saying, what do you say? We have let our guard down in the fight against drugs. And that's a terrible French accent, which is ironic as I'm of French descent. And then on the right, the former prime minister said legalization of cannabis would be an extremely permissive signal to send to young people. And it just warms my heart to know that Reefer Madness has got, you know, it's international, like all over the world, different countries, different cultures, different languages. They all have the same basic concepts. What about the children? WOTC exists in France. What about the children? We have let our guard down again in the fight against drugs. But again, you have to ask these people, why do you think what you're doing is working when you've got the highest rate? And then you look over to Spain, right next door to France. Spain, they have these cultivation clubs, right? You can join a co-op. Now, it's tough. It's like, you know, you got to be sponsored. Like somebody in the co-op's got to know you and sponsor you. And you got to be a Spanish citizen. And then you can be sponsored to join this special club that you all share in the expense of cultivating cannabis. And then you get your cannabis. So that's going on in Spain. Got plenty of adults over there smoking. Then you've got Amsterdam. You got the Netherlands to the other side of France, up north a bit, that has had its famously tolerant policy since the 1970s. While France was busy banning it, the Netherlands, the Dutch, were busy selling it in coffee shops, taking it away from the hard drugs market. And so what do you see? Well, you see Spain and Holland not even in the top percentages there, the top eight of the World Health Organization countries on kids that smoke pot. France is number one. So just like we've seen, you know, in America, you try to prohibit it, and for some reason, more kids are using it. And this led to an article that I wrote today for High Times, and I missed my deadline, so I don't know if it got in today. I apologize. Please, I'm sorry. I was late. But and that is this what about the children argument. And it's one of the few arguments that's left that they've got, the prohibitionists have, that they gain any traction whatsoever, this WOTC thing. And it's because nothing shuts down the logic circuits in a parent like threatening their kid's safety. So when you have this argument, when you're dealing with what about the children, WOTC, understand the battle that you're fighting is not one of logic, it's one of emotion. So the first step is to leverage that fear of their kids, for their kids, and maybe in some cases of their kids, leverage that fear for their children to our advantage. They need to fear the effect of prohibition on their kids more than whatever it is they're imagining legalization is going to be. Prohibition needs to become the enemy. Don't try to extinguish the fear first. Redirect the fear. I call this rhetorical jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is a martial art that uses an opponent's force in redirection. Rather than trying to stop the attack, you redirect it to harm the opponent. So this is one of those redirections. We've got a fear circuit activated. Oh, no, kids and weed. Ah! And say, yeah, oh, no, kids and weed. They're getting it now, even though we've tried to ban it. It's happening now. You need to bring people to understanding that the prohibition that exists now is unacceptable because it's a failed policy that does not work. It does not protect your children. We need them to fear the prohibition more than they fear the legalization. And one of the quick sound bites that does that is drug dealers don't check ID. It's one of the best responses that our activists have come up with because it implicitly frames that status quo as a danger to the kids. They've got easy access to marijuana now in a system that doesn't care if they're underage. So at least if we create a system that does care if they're underage, won't that help? And I always, you know, you got to be careful about this because you don't want to imply that legalizing marijuana means kids will never get marijuana. We've got legal alcohol now. We've got legal cigarettes now, and kids get access to those. We've got legal prescription drugs kids aren't supposed to have. They get access to those. And, you know, it happens. So don't get caught in the trap of saying, you know, legalization's going to, you know, drug dealers don't check IDs, and then once we check IDs, no kids will ever have weed. No, that's not going to help. You got to be careful about this because they'll bring up, well, you know, alcohol's banned, but when I was underage, we used to get around that. You know, we knew a guy with a fake ID, or you knew a particular store clerk who wasn't too careful, or you'd have an adult buy the booze for you. You know, get some guy sitting outside the 7-Eleven or whatever. The answer for that is yes, but at some point in that process, you had to corrupt an adult to get the booze, right? Either the store clerk with the fake ID or the store clerk not being responsible, or by corrupting that adult, paying him money to buy the six-pack, right? You couldn't just go to Tommy the tequila dealer in the high school parking lot and buy your tequila. You had to get an adult involved at some point, right? And the point here is to show that legalization isn't going to make it worse. It could make it better, but leave that as an implication. Don't get caught staking your claim on, yes, once we legalize, it'll be so much better for kids. It might not be. It might just be the same, like what we've seen in Colorado and Washington, where the use has kind of stayed the same. I believe that the use stays the same because the kids have already had their access. They've already got all the access they need. This is where you pivot to saying that, you know, nothing ever eliminates teen access to drugs. We've got legal alcohol, tobacco, and prescriptions. The question is, how easy do you make it? And this is where you start to paint legalization as the answer to that problem, is saying, you know, with prohibition, we make marijuana so ridiculously profitable by restricting access that there's profit in being a weed dealer. The reason there aren't any high school tequila dealers isn't because teenagers don't like to drink. We know that's not true. It's because there's no way to profit from it. There's no way for a kid to buy a case of tequila and sit in a high school parking lot and sell it at a markup and make money on it. And then you start hitting them with some data. And this is where I point out that, you know, Washington and Colorado, the kids' access didn't change. The dealer network they've got didn't go away, and it's not going to go away. The point of legalization is it doesn't make it any easier for them, and we hope it makes it harder. Since 1975, the government's been asking 12th graders how easy it would be for them to score weed. And this is where you lay the point down that what's going on now doesn't work. For 40 years now, since 1975, for 40 years, between 80 and 91% of the high school seniors said it would be easy or fairly easy to score weed. But last year, for the first time ever, fewer than 80% of the seniors said they could easily score weed. Now, yeah, it's barely below 80%. It's 79.5%. But still, after 3 years of legalization, it hasn't gotten easier for kids to get weed, and it's get tiny bit harder. And then sometimes you'll receive a rebuttal that's based in fear-mongering that's been pushed by the Rocky Mountain high-intensity drug trafficking area and other prohibitionists that'll say, oh, but Colorado has far greater teenage marijuana use rates than the rest of the country. See, legalized marijuana, more kids are smoking pot in Colorado than any other state. Well, this is where you have to follow that up with, yes, don't disagree. Yes, more kids in Colorado smoke than any other state. And they always have. Colorado's always had greater use rates after legalization and before legalization, before medical marijuana and after medical marijuana. Legalization doesn't make people smoke pot. Where people already smoke pot, they more likely favor legalization. Got to get the causation in the right order here. There's a reason why Washington, Oregon, California, Colorado were some of the first states to pass medical marijuana. And it wasn't that medical marijuana made more people smoke pot in those states. It's because there was already more popularity in smoking pot, more acceptance in marijuana culture in those states. And that leads to reforms. Whether or not a state has legal marijuana or medical marijuana is a reflection of how much that state already approves of marijuana. It doesn't cause more people to approve of it. Well, actually, it does after a while when they realize the sky hasn't fallen. But it doesn't cause them to use marijuana, is my point. Now, whenever you're dealing with kids, You also may get some of these prohibition talking points. And when we come back from our break, we'll tackle some of the most popular ones, like when they say kids could lose 8 points of IQ, or if they smoke pot, it's going to lead to worse life outcomes by the time they turn into middle age. We'll debunk that and more, the typical prohibition's talking points, right here on Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. I'm Radical Russ, live from beautiful legal potland, Oregon. We're going to take a break so we can pay some of the bills, and if you would like to sponsor the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com, please let me know. You can reach me as Radical Russ everywhere. Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, SoundCloud, YouTube, LinkedIn, Snapchat, what else? Skype, Massroots, Doobie, Instagram. We'll be right back.
This is the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com, helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
Tennessee's Congressman Steve Cohen.
Well, you know, if marijuana is a gateway drug, then kissing is a gateway activity to sexual addiction.
U.S. Representative Jared Polis.
Yes, we really have a growing group of representatives that support decriminalization.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Okay, maybe you're high, too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Yar, thar be pirates here.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children. Watsy, what about the children? That's one of the prohibitionists' main talking points, and one of the few halfway decent ones they have left. And I mean that with respect to how much effect it has, not how logical it is. I mean, really, if you're worried about the children, wouldn't you want to take marijuana out of criminal hands? A whole lot of what prohibition depends on is a fantasy. It's this idea that you can eliminate the law of supply and demand, that there could be this consumer product that people really, really want. And just through declaration of law, say that the people can't have that product. Now, this can have varying degrees of success depending on what the product is. Okay. When we're talking about something that's a synthetic, something that's manufactured, something that requires a lot of expertise to put together, the government might have some degree of success in preventing people from getting their hands on that. Now, they'll create a black market in it, and that black market will be violent, and it will raise the price of said product. but there can be limited degrees of success. But when we're talking about a product that is a freaking weed, it's a plant, right, that can be grown clandestinely, outdoors and indoors, there's no possible way that any administrative fiat can declare it to no longer be so, to no longer exist, to just completely eradicate it. Just can't happen. Not without the application of techniques that would be so repulsive to the mainstream that it would be counter to their goals. Like, it, you know, if they defoliated, you know, the Agent Orange all through, you know, the Humboldt Trinity Mountains and all that, yeah, you might have a greater degree of success, but nobody's going to put up with that. Nobody's going to allow that to happen. If you had death penalty for marijuana possession, maybe that starts to reduce some use rates. You know, if we were Singapore or one of these, you know, Malaysia or something, yeah, but nobody's going to go with that. Nobody's going to accept that. It's not in the realm of American possibility. But these "what about the children" arguments, a lot of them are predicated on this idea, this very idea that if that by prohibiting it, we're actually helping the kids in some way. We're keeping it away from them somehow. And obviously, that's not true. Whether or not you think it works or not, it's not. We have the numbers. We know how many kids between the ages of 12 and 17 end up using marijuana. And for this discussion, 18's an adult, folks. That's what I'm going with for this discussion. 18's an adult. So we know how many kids 12 to 17 are using marijuana. Obviously, what we're doing now isn't keeping it out of their hands. So given that marijuana is going to get into their hands because we've had 40 years of really punitive laws to try to stop it, and nobody anymore wants to make them more punitive. So given that there's going to be access for these kids, they're going to get a hold of weed, who should be in control of that? Should we continue to let criminals be in control of that? Because they are right now. And it's happening right now. Kids are getting their access to weed. And when we say criminals in that context, keep in mind that we're talking about people that grow a plant and provide it to other people who want it. Really no crime going on there. What becomes criminal is the interactions between actors in that market who cannot settle their disputes in court. That's what where the criminality comes into it. And it usually only comes into it at the higher levels of distribution. For a lot of people that are getting their hands on weed, they're getting it from a guy who knows a guy. And the guy is the guy who's growing the weed. There's a guy who grows the weed, there's a couple of the guys that know that guy, and then there's a bunch of people that know the guy who knows the guy. And that's usually the extent of most people's weed network. Not a whole lot of people that are linked in necessarily to the whole Mexican cartels or big violent gangs access aspect. I will concede that point to some degree to Kevin Sabet and his ilk. Now, I've had my experiences. Most of the time, I knew the guy. I was the guy who knew the guy, right? I knew the guy who was growing the weed. I knew the farmer who was producing that plant and getting it straight from the source. But there were also circumstances where I found myself in some very shady situations with Mexican cartel members in Caldwell, Idaho, and other places, Mountain Home. In other places. So I've seen it. I know what's happening on all these levels. Regardless if we're talking about someone getting it from a Mexican cartel or someone getting it from Clyde, the guy down the street they know, we're still dealing with a market that isn't regulated or tested or inspected in any way. So given that the kids are going to get their hands on some weed, should it be weed that hasn't been inspected or tested or labeled or anyone knows anything about it and possibly comes with a heaping helping of criminal activity and violence? Or should the kids get weed from at least some grower who was licensed or some shop that was licensed in some way if it was to be diverted from those places? It's not going to get any worse, right? Like the weed they're getting now isn't going to get any more illegal and isn't going to get any more pesticide-y or moldy or anything. You know, the risks they're taking now all still exist. But if they got some that was diverted from the legal market, at least it would be safer, wouldn't it? Just like, you know, kids in the 1920s, when they got their hands on alcohol, it could have been bathtub gin. Could have made them go blind. Now when kids get a hold of a bottle of gin, at least we know it's not going to make them go blind. They might get drunk, wreck their car, might alcohol overdose. There's all those possibilities. But at least they're not going to go blind. We've reduced the harm somewhat. But that's the thing, is these prohibitionists have this idea that legalization invents marijuana. If we legalize, oh no, there'll be marijuana. No, marijuana's here. Marijuana's already here. And there are already kids that are using it. So this is where this false belief system of theirs comes in, when they start to point out all these health effects that might happen to kids if they use marijuana. Now, a lot of them are not true. Some of them have some degree of truth to them. We generally agree that young people shouldn't be using a whole lot of marijuana for non-medical purposes because of their developing brain. Now, we don't know what to what degree it might affect that, but, you know, we are talking about a developing brain. Why not just err on the side of caution? My point has always been that when you're a young man between the ages of 12 and, say, 21, you're crazy anyway. Your brain is all so full with hormones and puberty that, you know, rational thought isn't always your first, second, or even third option. Let's not add mind-altering substances to the mix. But I digress. The point of this is that the prohibitionists have this idea that legalization invents marijuana, and if we legalize it, these terrible things would happen to kids. Well, I always turn that back around on and say, look, the marijuana exists now, and so the terrible things that you're warning us about are risks they already take. And they already have, like we said, 80 to 91% easy access to this stuff. And the stuff they have access to isn't tested or labeled or regulated or inspected. And nobody's checking their ID for it. So what I'm proposing with legalization isn't going to make anything worse. What, you think their access is going to go above 80% once it's legal? I don't think so. As legalization drops the price of marijuana, as we've seen in Washington and Oregon, and somewhat in Colorado, as legalization drops the price of marijuana, it becomes less lucrative to be a pot dealer. There becomes less access in the black market. And what access does exist doesn't make as much profit on marijuana. These guys increasingly will be less and less likely to want to sell weed. This will reduce the access for kids more than any prohibition has ever been able to accomplish. And so far, we've seen a tiny, tiny decline. Two of the other talking points you'll hear in this respect with the what about the children, they'll cite that Dunedin study that kids will lose 8 points of IQ. Oh no, you smoke pot as a teenager, by the time you're middle-aged, you'll lose 8 points of IQ. And the other one is, you smoke pot as a teenager, this is the most recent one, you smoke pot as a teenager and it leads to worse life outcomes. You'll lower social status, less happiness, more likelihood of, you know, interspousal violence and less income and attainment and et cetera, right? So it can be tricky discussing these things because you don't want to try to dismiss the harms of marijuana to children. Trying to convince their parent it's no big deal if their kid smokes pot just activates that emotional fear circuit about their kids. It's going to erase your logical argument. So don't try to dismiss it, right? We don't want to try to say, no, your kid can smoke pot and he'll be as smart as ever, which is true, actually, but it's a hard thing to rhetorically defend. So you can't let the reefer madness stand. You have to address it. I usually say, look, no one wants kids smoking pot, but that IQ study was soundly debunked in the same journal that printed the study. And a recent study of identical twins found no cognitive difference between the twin who smoked pot and the twin who didn't smoke pot. So we're trying to say it's not going to make things any worse. Don't let them try to put you into a position of saying it's going to make it better. And then pivot it to the danger. It's not to say we want teenagers smoking pot, but legal or not, some kids will use it. Just like we don't want a teen dying from a batch of Al Capone's moonshine, we don't want drug dealers selling prohibition marijuana to kids laced with God knows what. And on that second point, the whole marijuana outcomes thing, use their own rhetoric against them. Put the fear back in the parents' heart that these marijuana laws are going to hurt their kids more than the marijuana could. You can say, yeah, look, there's no doubt that marijuana use leads to worse life outcomes in general because people who get caught with marijuana get expelled from school. They get fired from their jobs. They get locked up in cages. So if your kid did get caught with weed, he's experimenting in college or something, gets caught, would he or she be better off with a criminal record living in your basement rather than going to college or working? See, I hit him right there with the kids living in the basement. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. If this prohibition does affect my kid, who are they going to turn to? They're going to be dropped out of college. And you know, a lot of parents are ignorant on this. And they think, you know, getting caught with weed's a slap on the wrist. And so I don't like my kid smoking weed. The cops caught him. He'll get the slap on the wrist. That'll turn my kid's life around and he'll start making better decisions. Not realizing that, no, it's not a slap on the wrist. It can have a devastating impact at this critical juncture in a young person's life when they're building their early employment options, when they're building their early educational options. A weed bust can be devastating. And not just for the kid, but also on the parents, on their pocketbook. Who's going to hire those lawyers? Where's that kid going to live? He's going to come back, live in your basement, and you're going to be paying lawyer bills. So we got to turn this argument, this what about the children argument, back on them by saying, yeah, what about the children? What about the children getting untested, tainted weed? What about the children not being checked for ID? What about the children who can make easy, good money being weed dealers? What about the children who don't get good logical information about this drug and then may think they were being lied to about the other drugs? And of course, what about the children who do need this as medicine to stop epilepsy or multiple sclerosis or something, who are denied this wonder, this ability to lead a real meaningful life? We're going to take a break. We'll come back and close up shop here on a Tuesday. I'm Radical Russ, live in Portland, Oregon.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about teen drug use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're just closing up shop here on the Russ Belville Show, but we'll be back live tomorrow from Refuge PDX and our coverage of the pre-party for Blazers versus Nugs. It's a special party with Uncle Spliffy, Cliff Robinson, so we're really looking forward to that. Also, got a message from Jackie in our chat room who wanted me to remind you all about the Podcast Awards. So you can go to podcastawards.com and you can nominate your favorite podcast for different categories, I guess. And I'm not going to tell you which podcast to nominate as your favorite. You can decide. But it's at podcastawards.com if you're interested in doing such a thing. Also, got a new piece up on the Huffington Post in their politics section addressing Hillary Clinton's latest comment. Oh, it's a whopper, folks. Here's the actual quote. She says, "Most of the guns that are used in crimes and violence and killings in New York come from out of state. And the state that has the highest number of per capita gun, the highest per capita number of guns that end up committing those crimes in New York come from Vermont." Per capita guns. What kind of bullshit stat is that? So what she's referring to is that there were 55 guns that made their way into New York in 2014 out of 4,008 that were happening crimes. That was 1.4% of the crime guns in New York came from Vermont. 38%, something like that, came from 34.9% came from New York, and 42.4% came from six southern states: Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida, or what gun advocates call the Iron Corridor, the Iron Highway, or whatever. Per capita guns. That's like if there's a guy in the house next door who has a gun, who's a lunatic, and there's an apartment building next door that has 1,000 people in it, and 100 of them have guns that are lunatics, I should be more worried about the guy in the house, because there's 100% per capita gun ownership in that house versus 10% per capita gun ownership over there in the apartment building. Hillary Clinton's getting desperate, folks. That's up on Huffington Post in their politics section. Check it out. It's called Hillary's BS Per Capita Gun Stat. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you tomorrow. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.